This is Steve Moulter, guitar player for Beware of Safety. You're listening to Post Rock, Paper Scissors, where rock always wins.
Thank you. Hello and welcome to Post Rock Paper Scissors. It's Armand here. This is episode 23 right now, and today's episode is going to be a little different than normal, because normally we basically have a playlist of songs and we go through them and we talk about the songs. Today it's different because we're only going to be playing two songs. One right now that you just heard. It was by a band called Arrive Alive, and it's a song called It's Not What You Say, It's How You Say It. And we'll also have a song at the end of the show, and we'll get to that later. But in the middle, now, what I'll be playing for you guys is basically earlier in the week, I had an interview with Jordan Valtz, who is the owner of the Silent Ballet. And, you know, he's been on our show before. We've become good friends with him. So we invited him over to the show to do a little interview with him so we can talk to him about whatever. I mean, they have a new compilation coming out and stuff in general. So we'll get to that. So here it is. It's a 45-minute interview. And we'll play a song at the end. And the song that we just played was from the compilation. And the song that we'll play later is also from the compilation. But anyway, here is the interview, and we'll see you in about 45 minutes.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Not bad.
All right. We'll just start off with, so how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Not bad. Not bad. What brings you to Korea?
Just spreading the good word, you know?
All right, sounds good. Okay, so I don't even think I said who you are yet. So just say your name and why you're on this podcast, I guess.
Jordan Valtz. I am the owner of the Silent Ballet magazine, which you can reach at www.thesilentballet.com. And I'm on the podcast, I guess, to talk about our upcoming compilations.
All right. So this is compilation number?
There's going to be 14 and 15. All right. Coming out in pretty much the next month.
Okay. I didn't get a chance to listen to anything because my work blocks mega upload, unfortunately. But I see a bunch of stuff and I'm liking it. So I guess just talk about the two comps in general. I mean, what each one is, I guess. What the theme, I guess, of each is?
Well, compilation 14 is going to be, it's mainly a post-rock compilation. So there's a lot of post-rock bands on there, and it'll be pretty familiar to people who read the website or have followed our compilation series. And on that one, we have bands like F and Charlie's Hero, which is kind of a new band out of England, but they have a CD coming out, I think, in the spring, and F has a CD coming out, I think, April 1st. So we have a track from their album on the compilation, and there's a bunch of other bands. Arrive Alive is going to be on the compilation, and they're kind of an internet duo from the U.S. and Sweden, and they took several years off, but right now they're making more material, so I was in contact with one of the guys, and he wanted to put a new track on the compilation. And yeah, we just got a bunch of different things. There's a couple ambient tracks in that one, just to add a little variety. And then Volume 15 is aiming to be a kind of post-metal sludge type compilation, which will be something we really haven't done that much of on the compilation series. So we're trying to dedicate a whole disc to that kind of stuff.
All right, that sounds good. Which one? I was going to say, which one do you like better, but that's a stupid question.
I can't pick.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. Okay, so these two are, I guess, like I said, more... Well, the first one's more post-rock, and the second one's like a little post-metal. And post-metal is, or sludge, is something that's covered on the site, but not to as much of an extent, I guess. So is this a sign that it's going to get more coverage, or just another compilation?
I feel like we do cover a pretty good amount of that kind of stuff. It's funny because people always say we should cover more of it. And I think if we did, we would just cover stuff that we didn't give high scores to. I think we try to pick out kind of the better releases that we see, and we try to review those because we think people will be interested in them. But yeah, we're not really interested in covering a lot of it just for the sake of giving out like a bunch of 5 and 6s and stuff and saying, oh, you sound like ISIS, here's a 5.
yeah.
If people want to know like every post-metal release that comes out, they can definitely find websites that are willing to tell them about it.
Gotcha.
I think where we are right now is we're kind of trying to just pick out the better releases from a variety of different genres and subgenres instead of just telling you about every little thing that comes out. I mean, you may have noticed we don't really cover as much post-rock as we used to. And I think it's kind of for that exact reason. We just got tired of reviewing stuff that we knew was going to get, you know, 4, 5s, and 6s just because, you know, they wanted to review or it was post-rock or whatever. And so now we kind of, those types of bands, I try to provide a little feedback privately, and then, you know, maybe on the second or third release, we'll try to cover them once they've kind of found their own ground, and it's a little bit more interesting to write about them.
Yeah, I got you. I mean, it's understandable. I think it's much better covering a plethora of genres than just, you know, going into detail on just post-rock or whatever. Because is anyone honestly going to even listen to the 3s or the 4s if you review them?
No, probably not, no. It's just a waste of time. You can have that viewpoint. I think it's always good for bands to get the feedback.
Well, yeah.
And I know, like, for the new bands who are just, like, doing out demos or whatever, it's great for them to get some sort of feedback. But at the same point, I think a lot of them are discouraged by really negative reviews.
Yeah, that was back when I used to review. That was the hardest thing for me was to give a band, like, a 2 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're trying their hardest, and they're, like, a little unknown band. And here I am ripping them a new one. It just felt wrong.
So, well, if they're sending it in, they've got to be able to take whatever you're willing to say about it.
I'm too much of a nice guy.
You're too much of a nice guy. It's probably true.
It's true. Anyway, let's see. So, is there anything else you wanted to talk about the comps?
They're free to download for anybody who's not checked them out. We've got 13 volumes up already. We'll have 2 more very shortly.
And they're all available on the homepage?
They're all available on the homepage. We now actually link them from the homepage. It took us about 2 years to realize we should do that, but we have them. You don't have to go searching for them anymore.
Yeah.
And I know people are always interested to see what language the next title will be in, but I cannot divulge that information yet.
Okay. is there any, besides for being like sonically themed, is there an overarching theme for each comp?
Sometimes there is, sometimes there's not. It kind of depends on how closely I work with the artist who makes the cover art.
Okay.
But sometimes people will approach me and say, hey, I'm interested in doing some cover art. I'll create a piece for your compilation. Like, is there something specifically you're looking for? And then we might work together. Sometimes I just find something that interests me, or somebody sends me something that is really interesting and I think it fits with something. So yeah, some compilations, there is kind of a theme to the music and the art and everything. And other times it's just stuff that looks cool and things that sound cool.
So should we expect any wolves and eagles and bears and stuff?
Probably not. That's kind of a bandwagon I'm not really going to jump on.
That's true. All right. So I guess we'll move away from the comps for a bit, but just still talk about Silent Ballet or whatever. So you guys now have a top 50 of every single year, correct?
A top 50 of every single year from the past decade, yes.
Yes. Since 2000 to 2009, right. Okay. So do you have a favorite year?
Do I have a favorite year? Oh.
not of the list. Like, what is your favorite list, or which list do you guys think you got more accurate?
Mm-hmm.
What year is your favorite year personally?
Personally, what year is my favorite year? Ah, that's tough to say. They all have something different. I don't know. I think 2005, which was the first list I did, I really like that year. Because that was the first list I did, and it kind of, a bunch of that list, like, it's probably the least accurate if I had to do them all over again, but it also has a lot of my favorite bands on them, like my personally favorite bands. Not necessarily like the best bands, but the ones that I enjoy listening to the most. And it also has like the Timeout Drawer. I love that CD that's on that list, but they kind of have quit or changed into a different group since that CD, so it's the last one from them. And there's a couple more of that type of thing on that 2005 list. It's kind of just nostalgic in a way that the other ones aren't as much.
Yeah, makes sense. I think, to me also, I think 2005 is probably my favorite. And I think it's going to be a lot of people's, because that list you made was pretty much like a post-rock cherry popper for most people.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it has a lot of nostalgic value for a lot of people, I'm sure.
It does. And you had a couple of classic releases, like Sigur Rós had an album out there. Explosion in the Sky had that EP that year. So it wasn't just like an entirely underground type of deal, but I think all around it was a good year.
Yep. You guys also put out a top 50 artists of the decade.
We did.
So those are all, I'm promoting you guys, they're all on the homepage as well, so go check them out, people.
We are, our homepage is really accessible these days.
It's good.
It used to be not so much.
That's good. People are too lazy to click more than once, to be honest.
Yeah,
I want to see everything at once.
I've heard that like 75% of browsers don't do more than 3 clicks on a website or something.
Yeah, probably not. I wouldn't be surprised. So maybe this one's a little hard, but what is your favorite artist of the decade, personally?
Favorite artist of the decade? Well, the one I was trying to get the staff behind to be the top pick, but did not succeed in it, was Tim Hecker.
Okay.
And Tim, it wasn't I know Tim Hecker was our top artist of 2009. He actually wasn't my top artist of 2009. Like, there were other albums in 2009 I liked more than his CD. But I thought, kind of taking in the whole decade, he released a lot of material, and all of it I find really good, and each one is different. And there aren't really any releases of his that I don't care to listen to.
All right. Makes perfect sense. Consistency and volume, right?
Consistency, volume. Like, Stars of Lead was also pretty high for me, but all they had out were 2 double albums. And so you can look at a double album and say, okay, that's like 4 albums. 2 double albums could be 4 albums if they had, like, decided to space it out or whatever. And so that's a lot of volume they put out, but I think Hecker put out a little bit more, and I think I might actually prefer some of his stuff to Stars of the Lead.
Technically, those 2 double albums could have been 8 EPs, probably, because there's...
They could have been, like, 8 or 10 EPs, yeah.
They should have just released 1 EP every year of the decade out of that material.
But one EP, anyway. They could have, but, you know, we probably would have got bored of them after a while.
Probably. So I'm guessing there's going to be a top 100 albums of the decade coming up, or something like that?
Yeah, I think we're shooting for 200.
Okay. Is there a time frame for that, or when
would you expect it? I don't want to tie us down, but I'm hoping to get it done in the summer at some point.
All right. That makes perfect sense. It's not like a Pitchfork who gives a top artist of the decade in the middle of 2009.
I don't know why they waited so long. They could have done it in 2007.
Seriously, that was just one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. As if the end of 2009 doesn't matter, or at least give those albums some time to sink in or something.
It also, like, the releases from 2009 that were on that list, you knew they were going to be high on the 2009 list. And I think their reasoning for putting it so early was to not detract from their end-of-the-year lists. but it kind of spoiled it in the sense that anything that was on the list from 2009 had to be high up on the 2009 list, so there really wasn't any surprises.
Makes perfect sense, yeah.
So it was that. I mean, they should have waited, but that's their decision. Yeah, but we decided to wait for ours, but we also knew that a bunch of people would be doing Pitchfork-type things and trying to comment on the end of the decade right away. And I think we felt more comfortable in just doing a general what artists have been kind of most influential over the past 10 years than what releases are still really good, you know, 10 or 5 years after their release days.
All right. If you could make a guess as to what you think your staff would put as a top 5 or something, any ideas?
That's tough. I feel like Godspeed has got to be in the top 5. So I know a lot of the staff was upset when I put Gas's Pop ahead of it in 2000. I still stand by that, though. And I know a lot of people say that's not Gas's best release, but still, it's a really good release. It doesn't have to be his best to be number one.
That's true. That is very true.
I'd expect something from Godspeed, something from Stars of the Lid, Sigur Rós, maybe Do May Say Think and Explosions in the Sky.
Makes perfect sense.
that's just, I mean, it depends how predictable people decide they want to be.
What I found interesting is the lists that you guys make every year are a bit more volatile. I mean, like, Do Make wasn't in 2000. When they released You, Your History, and then they were in the top...
2007.
Seven.
Yeah,
something like that. And I mean, it makes sense. Not every album is going to be consistently good, but you always hear an outcry saying, oh, how is this band not even on the list? But
right.
when you get to the top artists of the decade, it seems to get more consistent in terms of what you'd expect people to say.
Yeah, probably. It'll probably be a little bit, like, our lists aren't necessarily, I think on a year-to-year basis, you're right, they don't go with public opinion very closely. But the top 200 list probably will start to mirror public opinion a little bit more. But I think there's still a lot of room for surprises, like the Mercury program. They've had some great releases over the decade, and I know they're not as popular as those other guys, but I can totally see them kind of being a dark horse and pulling out a top 5. Or the Samuel Jackson 5, that could be one. Easily Misunderstood, that's liked by a bunch of people. That could pull out something in the top 10 or top 5. That wouldn't surprise me. Grails could pull something out. You know, it could go in a variety of directions, I think. And that's not really even including, like, electronic artists. So, you know, people might decide that The Knife deserves something really high up or something. It could happen. So it'll be interesting to see if that list kind of mirrors our year-to-year list in terms of, you know, volatility or unpredictability. But, you know, it's hard to deny bands their due credit.
Yeah. Speaking of dark horses, will there be, you guys haven't done this in a while, and I think it was a pretty popular thing, but it probably took some effort, to have a March Madness style bracket of the top artists of the decade, or something like that, or top albums of the decade?
Maybe, yeah, we could do something like that.
When you get the top 200, you get the top 64, and then do a bracket, I don't know, just...
Yeah. Could do a bracket. People take it so personally. That's kind of why we stopped it. Was it's supposed to be kind of a fun little activity, and people get so emotional about it.
Yeah, that's the internet for you.
I guess it's like the real March Madness. People take it very seriously.
All right. Speaking of the internet and people taking stuff seriously, well, we usually talk about the state of instrumental music and whatever, the cloud of music that TSB covers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to ask this. The internet is obviously a big part of the growth of the genre. I mean, you see a lot more people listening to this style of music than, previously.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think if there was no internet, the same evolution would occur, but just at a slower pace?
No, I definitely do not think that would happen. I think this has occurred precisely because of the internet.
Makes perfect sense.
And it's interesting when people, you know, it's really not as big of an issue anymore. I don't really hear people talking about, like, illegal downloading or file sharing as much as they used to. But whenever people would talk about how they didn't like it or they didn't approve of it, it just seemed strange to me. Like, I can understand a band like Metallica. It's like, oh, don't download things illegally. But for, like, the types of musicians we cover, like, they probably wouldn't exist if not for illegal downloads. And even if they could claim they've never, you know, done anything like that, and, you know, the bands that they've been influenced by, they've read about in magazines or whatever, the people covering those bands are participating in file sharing and illegal downloading to stay consistent with the scene, to stay up to date with what's happening. It's just, you know, their information, wherever they're getting it from, is coming from that source in one way or another.
All right. I mean, yeah, I think the internet's obviously a huge part, and all these bands that I guess you guys cover, or artists, I don't think they're necessarily the ones concerned with internet downloads in the first place. You know, I'm sure they would, well, maybe some artists that are a little bit bigger, you know, the Sigur Rós and the such. But a lot of these smaller bands, it's a godsend, you know, to get downloaded illegally.
It should be. People are listening to your music.
Yeah. Well,
it's better that they listen and not pay than not listen at all, I think.
That's, yeah, makes perfect sense. That way too.
I think I've talked to people who have expressed concern over the fact that children now grow up and don't get accustomed to paying for music. So they're not, like, it just doesn't occur to them that they should pay for music. Yeah. And that's troubling because we're still, and I mean, the record industry and even like smaller bands, they still operate under the assumption that they need to make a lot of money selling records, or they need to make X amount of money by selling, you know, MP3s or records or whatever, that their music has a value in terms of people buying it and listening to it. But I think eventually someone's going to come up with a system where you can become a musician and live off that without actually having to sell music.
Yeah, the model has to change. It's not going to be able to continue this way.
The model has to change, and I think probably within the next 10 or 20 years, kind of buying records from a record store or buying MP3s is going to be kind of outdated.
Do you think it's going to be more of that Radiohead model or something else?
Well, that seems to be getting more more popular, you know, pay what you want. But I think even that's not really going to sustain itself, because I think people are going to pay zero for the most part. And I've seen a couple models that try to offer free downloads and then make money off the hits that those happen by putting up advertisements or whatever. But with the state of the economy, I think you've seen that relying on advertisements is tricky, because once those goes away, you really have no financial base to support yourself on, and then you're kind of stumbling. So you kind of need something more consistent than advertisement. Yeah. You know?
Well, we'll see what happens.
I'm not proposing a solution, so be happy with whatever happens, whoever does it, whatever they come up with.
Yeah. All right. So I guess that covers the more so serious side of the podcast, the interview. I mean, unless you had anything else you would like to add.
No, nothing particular. Is this where we talk about silly stuff?
Yeah, I guess. I just doodled like some stuff like 10 minutes before this interview, so we'll see. They're not the greatest questions in the world, but I'll do my best.
Okay.
All right, so this is first going to start off with, I guess, a few questions that kind of popped into my head based off the artist that I saw in the I guess compilation 14, the post-rock one, or is that 15?
That was 14, yeah.
14, okay. So I see there's youth pictures of Florence Henderson in here.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not the greatest question, but who do you prefer, or in a battle, I don't know what kind of battle, but some use your imagination. Who would win, Florence Henderson or Shirley Jones, the Partridge Family mother?
Let's do like a DJ battle. That'd be interesting.
That there you go. Who would win in a DJ off?
I don't know. That's tough to say. You always ask these really strange questions that I don't have answers to. You know, like exactly how to get me.
They're riddles. It's like the God and the Boulder paradoxes. No one knows the answer to that question. The Florence Henderson one.
There can be a right answer to that. I'm trying to think. You know, that's really like Brady Bunch versus Partridge Family.
I think Florence Henderson would like drop some nasty dubstep. You know,
it's possible. I'm trying to think which one had like a more legitimate musical career behind them, because I know like the Brady Bunch did some music, right?
Yeah, I think they released a record. They probably have like a Christmas record too or something. And Partridge Family the same. I don't think anyone had like this neo baroque pop folk, I don't know, special ambient, all these adjectives, you know. I don't think any of them had an album like that.
Yeah, not well, yeah, definitely not. So I think the Partridge Family has an edge in terms of actually being a little bit more musical, but I think I'd probably have to give it to Brady Bunch, because if it's in a DJ battle, people who I think are less interested in creating music have a much wider variety of music to pull from in something like that.
That's a good approach.
Because she probably listens to a lot more music than the Brady Bunch, or than the Partridge Family, than Florence Henderson.
What do you think is in Florence Henderson's tape deck or CD player, whatever she has right now?
I'm going to go with Lady Gaga.
All right. Not Kesha?
Nope, got to be Lady Gaga. Everyone's listening to Lady Gaga. Even in Korea, they're listening to Lady Gaga.
Okay, it's like an interesting question, I guess. What's really popular in Korea right now in terms of music?
A lot of K-pop,
all right.
Which is similar to J-pop, you're probably familiar with, but it's the Korean version.
Okay.
You also, there's a lot of pop songs which have been, you know, they'll take an American or British pop song or whatever, and they kind of take the music to it, and they change a little bit, and then sing their own lyrics over it. And there's quite a few of these songs out where they're not exactly the same, but you'll listen to it and you're like, that really reminds me of this other song by, like, Justin Timberlake or Lady Gaga or something. Because they've basically just taken the music and they've changed a little bit, and then they've done their own music over it. And I always wonder, like, how is that legal? But apparently it's okay.
They don't get, like, they don't pay royalties or some kind of, they don't buy...
There could be. I mean, they might have to pay to use something. It's possible, but...
Because, I mean, if Vanilla Ice was sued for the David Bowie track, then anything can happen.
Yeah, but now you're getting into international law. That was all, like, within, like, U.S. or whatever, right?
It's like international waters. You can, like, hunt for whales and stuff.
Yeah, like, if you started a record company in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, you could probably rip off all kinds of bands and musicians, and there would be no ill consequences.
Okay, move on to the next question. Again, related tangentially to the Comp 14, I notice F is on it. What is your... Are you cooking something?
No.
Okay. What letter do you like better, E or F?
E or F. I think I like F better.
Any particular reason?
I think I would just favor a consonant over a vowel if given the option.
Uh-huh. That's a great answer.
Consonants are a little more zany than vowels.
Well, let me see. Do I have any more on the comp? I think. Oh, this one is again, Charlie's Heroes. Charlie's Hero reminded me of Charles in Charge.
Charles in Charge. Okay.
So, when I was a kid, I used to always confuse Scott Baio with Tony Danza.
I do the same thing now.
So, Again, another, let's say we have another DJ off, or another, who would win, Scott Baio or Tony Danza?
I go with Tony Danza. Scott Baio, there was a time when Scott Baio was banging like every actress in Hollywood, so he can't have time to put together a good playlist.
That makes a lot of sense. But don't you think he has like some bedroom playlist that he has that he, like, gets the ladies into it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess you have to define the parameters of the DJ battle then. Are we trying to sleep with our audience or what?
Okay, so I guess we'll just leave it at Tony Danza would win at a DJ battle, but Scott Baio would win at a getting the ladies into the sack with the horn flute battle.
Yeah, he'd probably try to sleep with several of the people at the DJ battle, too.
Oh, makes a lot of sense, yeah. I could see that. Okay, this is unrelated to the comp, but another post-rock band-related question. And another battle of some sort. Who is, we'll just say who's your favorite. And I think I know who's the answer's, what the answer is going to be, but Andy Dick or Dick Tracy or Tracy Morgan or Morgan Freeman?
Tracy Morgan, definitely.
Oh, the Dark Horse. Okay. I would have gone with Morgan Freeman, but...
No, I've always loved Tracy Morgan. That guy's hilarious.
Definitely funny.
I remember one of my favorite casts of SNL was when they had Tracy Morgan and Tim Meadows. Those two were just hilarious together.
Okay, let's see. Do you have time or?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I can go on for a little bit longer. Let's see. I'm sure we've talked. Speaking of, no. See, now I'm confusing Scott Baio with. Do you also confuse Scott Baio with Ralph Macchio?
No, just Tony Danza.
Yeah, I can see it. But did we talk about Karate Kid last time? Probably did.
I think we might have, but that was before they released a trailer for the new Karate Kid.
That's true. What did you think of the trailer?
Looks really bizarre.
Yeah.
I can't take Jackie Chan seriously in that role.
He's no Pat Morita or whatever his name was.
He is not. I don't think it's going to succeed in the way that they're hoping it's going to.
Yeah, who's the audience for that?
I don't know.
I'm forward to watching that.
I don't know.
Because, I mean, at least if you're remaking something like Karate Kid, you would try to appeal to the original audience. You know, like, oh, come relive your memories with Jaden Smith. I mean, who's really going to...
And the plot just seems, from the trailer, the plot just seems so trite. Like, yeah. Jaden Smith's getting beat up at school or something, and he's like, I gotta learn Kung Fu so I can beat up these guys.
Yeah, I think he moves to China, and then he gets beaten up, so then he has to learn Kung Fu. It makes perfect sense.
Well, that's what I would do if I moved to China. It doesn't make any sense at all. You're wrong about that.
Okay, that's true, yeah. But I don't think they were intending to make sense when they made that movie. I don't know what gave them the idea for that, but anyway. Speaking of remakes, what movie would you actually like to see be remade?
What movie would I like to be see? Would I like them to remake? I'd say like The Goonies.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
The Goonies is such a classic, like, and it's one of those movies that's kind of bad. So there's potential for it to be a good movie. Like, it's good because it's kind of bad and stupid.
And I think it's good because everyone, when they watched it, they were kids. And there's so much nostalgic value invested into it.
Yeah.
Right now, if you watch it, you're still going to enjoy it, even if it's pretty stupid.
I think, like, kid movies from, you know, that time period, like the 80s or whatnot, those are good remake movies now because... You could either remake it and try to make it like kind of a serious movie and people who watch it as a kid will watch it, or you could try to remake it as a kid's movie and kids will go see it, but also people will probably see it who saw it the first time just because they liked it as a kid.
Yeah.
So you could do like The Goonies, you could do Neverending Story, all that kind of stuff.
Neverending Story would not be bad with like a CGI dragon now or whatever.
Oh yeah, that'd be sweet. You could do Princess Bride. That's one of my favorite ones. That one might be tough to top those Princess Brides.
Yeah, I can see a NeverEnding Story working out, and then they do 3D, and then you see the dragon flying in the theater or whatever.
Definitely, you better start writing the script. Someone's gonna take it. They're gonna listen to this. Like, yeah, NeverEnding Story.
I gotta sell this before it's too late. Okay, decide.
And Tron's being remade. That's coming out this year.
I heard.
There was the most exciting thing is that Daft Punk's doing the score or the soundtrack for that one.
Who?
Daft Punk.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's interesting.
Which is like the perfect group to do that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Okay. I'm looking forward to that now. Is there like a trailer for that yet, or is it just in production?
There is a trailer for it, yeah.
I don't think I've seen it yet. Okay.
I don't know if it's going to be good or bad yet. I can't tell, but...
It's Tron. It doesn't really matter.
It's Tron. It doesn't matter, right? I bet that's probably going to do pretty well. Because it's such a cult classic these days.
Yeah. And you can do a lot with, like, graphics and stuff.
Yeah, graphically it looks pretty cool. And it's not like anybody expects it to be good, so...
That's true. That's a good thing. I mean, people should try to remake movies that are kind of bad and cheesy as opposed to what are deemed, you know, really serious classics.
Because, yeah.
I mean, if you still fail, well, it was kind of expected because it was a cheesy 80s movie or whatnot in the first place.
And there are so many horrible 80s movies. Like, you could probably get 2 decades worth of remakes out of remaking the crappy 80s movies.
Was the 80s, like, the worst decade? In an overall sense.
I was born in the 80s, so I hope it wasn't the worst decade.
Well, yeah, so was I, but, I mean, it was just, looking back, when I try to watch, like, older films, the 80s is, and the early 90s, it's just, even though I grew up in that time, I find it so difficult to watch those movies and see those, all the trends and the hair and the clothes and all that stuff. I don't know.
Early 90s were pretty bad, too.
Yeah.
I don't know what was into people around that time.
it's bizarre.
Also have to think, what happened to all those clothes that people used to wear? Are they hiding away in closets? Does the Salvation Army have them all?
The Goodwill is stocked.
The Goodwill is stocked? 80s
fashion? They probably have an 80s section. I've never been to a Goodwill, but they probably just have an 80s section. I can see that.
But who's going to buy that?
Hey, the 80s, the interesting thing about the 80s is it was an awful decade, kind of. Mm. Or not awful, but it was a very cheesy decade. But it's always slowly coming back, kind of. You always hear people saying the 80s are coming back because there's like one trend of the 80s that's back. Like leg warmers were back like 2 years ago or something like that. And there's always something that's kind of coming back. And that whole American Apparel fashion style is all age-related anyway, and that's really popular.
Until I see a post-rock band with a keytar, the 80s are not back.
That would be interesting. We should have... There should be more synths. And I would love to see a keytar. There should be like a Spinal Tap post-rock band.
M83's last album was pretty 80s-influenced.
Yeah, that's true. You can just tell by looking at the cover.
Yeah. He really was not trying to hide that one at all.
No.
Keytar, though, that's where I would go in that direction if I was going for, like, an 80s revival. I'd be like, somebody in this band needs to learn to play the keytar, and you need to do it fast.
Okay. This brings me to a question. Speaking of keytars and stuff, what is one instrument you would like to see more of, or if it's currently non-existent, what would you like to see actually emerging in the genre, or what's already in the genre would you like to see more of?
I'm a big fan of brass instruments. I always love it when bands can incorporate brass somehow into their compositions. Like Foxhole always has like good brass parts. I think it really adds a lot to a piece, especially since, you know, like, a lot of people are into, like, violins and cellos and stuff, but I think there's enough people that do that sort of stuff There's a lot of people who try to use piano. That it just doesn't really do it anymore in the sense that it used to. But brass, I think, is still untapped by a large amount of people.
That's true. That's true.
But one that I always, when I talk to bands, I always try to tell them that they need to use harmonica.
Yes, that is a great idea.
And I think, I know Souvenirs Young America had a couple tracks with harmonica, but otherwise there haven't been a lot of bands that have gone with the harmonica.
Yeah, every time I think about the harmonica, there was a Tok Tok's album, Spirit of Eden. Was that the album's name?
Yeah.
In 89. And the first track, there's this one segment of harmonica. It's like only 10, 15 seconds long. And it's like the 10 most glorious seconds of music I've ever heard. And it's such a tease because it just gets you so involved. And then it doesn't come back at all. That was tangentially related. I just had to say that.
No, it's true, though. The harmonica is quite nice, I think, when it can be used properly.
We should see more of that.
A band that I think gets not enough credit for their choice of instrumentation is Theta Knot. They pretty much will stop at nothing to use an instrument. And I know they're probably one of the only bands that uses a saw as an instrument. And I remember talking to the guy who plays the saw, and they're like musical saws. You get like special musical saws to use. And he's like, no, I'm not using a special musical saw. I use a real saw. And he's like, one time I really cut myself badly at a show using that saw. So I thought about using a musical saw, but then he decided, no, it wasn't like real if you have to use a musical saw. You've got to use like a real rusty old saw if you're going to use this.
That is dedication. That's a guy who knows what he wants in his music.
That is, yeah. I think they're actually going to have an album out this year. They've been working on some stuff for a while. They had that Christmas album out last year. That was pretty nice.
Yeah, I never got to listen to that, but
you should check it out. It's, I mean, how often do you see a Christmas album?
Yeah, that's true. Was it like instrumental?
It is. It's instrumental, but they chose a lot of kind of non-mainstream Christmas songs, which is nice. There are a couple on there that you'll recognize, but I'd say like half of it were songs that I weren't aware that I had ever heard before.
Well, you don't even know if they're really Christmas songs. Maybe they just made them up.
They could have just made them up, yeah, but I think they are actually Christmas songs.
Well, the Christmas album genre, that's a bloated market, but not in post-rock, obviously, or instrumental music. So it's good to see something a little different. There's only so many times you can hear, I don't know, Michael Bublé singing Jingle Bells or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also, people just buy stupid shit at Christmas that they would never buy any time else. Like,
have to buy something, you know?
They buy Christmas records because they're having a Christmas party and they want to play Christmas music. Or because they like listening to Christmas music in the car. So yeah, like, if you could get your instrumental Christmas music in a record shop, I'm sure you'd get a lot of people buying it because like, oh, Christmas. Oh, it's an instrumental. That's great. Yeah, that'll be fun.
They should have, like, gotten Best Buy to sell it.
Yeah, get it in Best Buy, probably. And it's also, like, it doesn't really have a time frame. Like, people will buy, like, a 20-year-old Christmas CD. Yeah. I don't really care. It's not like, oh, it's an old album. Yeah. Like, oh, it's a Christmas album. Sure, I don't care when it's from.
Yeah, you can buy a Christmas album from 2,000 years ago. It's this.
Christmas doesn't change. I mean, it's still, you go out, you buy a bunch of stuff you don't need for people you don't really know, and you give it to them.
It's a great time of the year.
It's a great time of the year.
We need more holidays to buy nonsensical gifts.
You could do like a Halloween album too.
They should make an album for every season. A holiday. You can have a Mother's Day album.
St. Patrick's Day album.
Father's Day.
Yeah.
Sure, there's a Grandma's Day and a Grandpa's Day. So have the whole quadrology, or quadrilogy, what do you want to call it? And on that note, I think this is a good part to end the interview. All right. Always good to have you on, Jordan.
All right, cool. Thanks a lot, dude.
See ya. Okay, welcome back. It's Armand here again. Hopefully you enjoyed that interview. Thank Jordan for coming on and doing the interview again. If you enjoyed it quite a bit, we also have older interviews with Jordan up on archive.org. You just have to go there and Google. I mean, not go Google, but go there and type in post rock, paper, scissors into the search, and I'm sure you'll find it. So, anyway, that was the whole show for today. Next week, we'll get back to our, you know, our regular programming style. But until then, we'll play one last song. This is also from the compilation 14. Like the first song we played was also off compilation 14. And this next song is by F. And you're going to have to give me a second because for some reason I did not write it down. I just came here and started talking. And the song is called... Wait up, is this the right one? I believe it's called Songs of Ghosts. Hold a minute. Yes, it is. So Songs of Ghosts, that's what you're going to be hearing. It's by F, who's gaining some steam, very popular band. And I'm assuming this is off their upcoming record or something like that. So here's F. Hopefully you enjoyed today's show. We'll be back again next week with regular programming. And thanks to Jordan for doing the interview. And thank you for listening. See you guys.